Bitcoin offers these low growth companies basically like an injection, right, into their balance sheet, but also their culture. It's kind of a transformational strategy that can change the branding of the company into one that's innovative and exciting. River had a great report. I mean, they said that if you only need 3% of your treasury and the rest can be in cash equivalents, and you'd still outpace the rate of the inflation rate, the money supply. I think about kind of the long-term consequences of just corporate America being more resilient, right? These companies actually having more resilient balance sheets and being able to weather the storms. That's very exciting when they don't have to decapitalize themselves and they actually have hard appreciating assets on their balance sheets instead of cash that's just withering away. And then they have to decapitalize themselves with stock buybacks and dividends.
Welcome back to the Theia Podcast. I'm Joe Consorti, where we talk with the brightest minds in the world of technology, finance, economics, and startups. Today, I'm here with a dear friend, Sam Callahan, Bitcoin analyst and author of The News Block, to talk with us today about Bitcoin corporate treasury strategy, global macro, and a whole host of other things. Sam, how you doing, man?
Joe, it's good to see you.
Long time no speak. Lots has changed in the both of our lives. We are both engaged now, slated to be married. Was not the case the last time that we were speaking. So certainly a lot has changed. And you have grown, very, very closely with kind of Bitcoin corporate treasury strategy. You're now working in an advisory capacity. And so today, kind of, I felt it would be good, particularly with the news that happened yesterday, Cathedra announcing they would be adopting a formal Bitcoin treasury strategy. They'd be retooling their entire business so they could get more cash flow and increase their Bitcoin per share. Why is Bitcoin such an attractive option for businesses? Why are people looking at Bitcoin as a reserve asset to put on their treasury?
Well, quite frankly, there's just not that many options for these corporations when you look at kind of traditionally how they manage their treasury reserves. I mean, they have cash and cash-like equivalents typically, and those are subject to inflation, right? So there's inflation risks. They get diluted over time because of the printing of money. And so a lot of them don't keep up with the pace of the increase in the money supply over long periods of time. So that's like the Michael Saylor melting ice cube analogy, right? And so they have to look for other things to invest their, to do with their retained earnings, essentially. So their cash. And they have different options. And a lot of the times what they decide to do, at least in the last decade or so, especially in this low interest rate environment, is they give it back to their shareholders via dividends or buybacks. They could also try to acquire a company, but that comes with integration risks that you never know how that's going to go with the you acquire a company, how the cultures are going to clash, whether that's going to actually have a return on the invested capital or not. They could, reinvest in the business. So typically they have like certain internal projects where they can reinvest the money. But a lot of these companies have a lot of cash and there's only so many good ideas that are actually going to, return on that invested capital when you think about ideas internally, whether spinning out a new product line or something like that, research and development, innovation, things of that matter. And so there's only so many options. And so a lot of the times they've been basically paying out dividends or buying back their stocks, and that decapitalizes them, right? So it basically is giving the cash away because they don't have, they're not going to invest that wisely enough or better enough than like a shareholder. So they give the money back to the shareholders. And that puts them at a weaker position when you look at their balance sheets because it makes them less resilient. And so basically, they could invest in gold, right? But gold doesn't really keep up with monetary supply either. They can invest in, stocks, but you can only invest up to 40% of your balance sheet as a corporation before you have to get reclassified as an investment company. And so that's kind of got a cap on it. And shareholders can do that themselves. But then there's like this thing, Bitcoin, right? So Bitcoin is not a security. It actually has exceeded the pace of the growth in the money supply. And it's really attractive to some of these corporations that are more forward thinking as a treasury reserve asset. And you're starting to see like the early innings of this with MicroStrategy, as well as a handful of other companies that are starting to adopt this, and their share price is really benefiting from that treasury reserve strategy. Same with the enterprise value of their corporations. And so it's exciting. It's kind of like, I think, a turning point, an inflection point, where you finally have an environment where corporations can kind of feel comfortable with this, and we can kind of get into that. But that's the gist of everything.
Absolutely. Yeah, Bitcoin for businesses, you certainly make a great point. The fact that it's not a security, that is a huge point that a lot of people don't really understand and don't get initially. Bitcoin is an option. They look at it and see that it grows faster than the growth of the money supply. But you can look at any number of tech stocks that are also, NVIDIA, for example, right? Any number of tech stocks, but you can't deploy above a certain percentage of capital into a security. Otherwise, you may get reclassified as an investment company. What do you think about Bitcoin per share? So, obviously this has been kind of reported in different financial metrics for some of these companies that are on a Bitcoin standard. But yesterday, it seemed kind of all at once, Cathedra Bitcoin released that they would be working to optimize their business strategy to maximize Bitcoin per share. Metaplanet, Dylan published on Metaplanet's online dashboard a Bitcoin per share dashboard. And so it seems like this financial metric is gaining a lot more steam, particularly among these Bitcoin treasury strategy companies, the companies that are employing this strategy. Why is Bitcoin per share an important metric for companies to track and companies to look at? And why do investors care about companies' Bitcoin per share when they're making an investment decision?
Well, I think it's like this idea of accretive dilution. So typically, whenever a company raised money, accessed the capital markets and raised equity, it would be dilutive for shareholders because you're issuing more shares. And that's typically, the shareholders don't usually like that. But when you raise the money and then buy Bitcoin, and then the price, the price appreciation of the Bitcoin holdings, outpace the dilution of the shareholders, you have to think of it as anti-dilutive, actually, for the company. And so Bitcoin per share becomes a new earning per share. And it's important because, as if you look at these companies and how they're innovating with their balance sheet strategies, you start to look at that as maybe the most important metric when you think about the health of the company or the resiliency of the company. When you look at the strength of their balance sheet with how much Bitcoin they have per share. And I think that people really misunderstand that metric, or maybe it's just like a new metric for them. They don't quite understand it yet. But even like MicroStrategy introduced Bitcoin yield as a kind of similar type of metric, where they're looking at the amount of Bitcoin that they acquire in a certain period versus the amount of dilution that has occurred over that period. And if that's gone up, it means that they've acquired more Bitcoin than the amount of shares that have entered the company over that period of time. And so that's another way to look at it. But yeah, I think it's more and more important. I'd love to hear your thoughts about it too. But it seems like more and more companies are starting to think that way, especially Bitcoin-focused companies where, their company strategy revolves around Bitcoin.
Yeah, absolutely. For investors, just like you said, a lot of them may get spooked by the prospect of issuing so many shares. But this idea that the appreciation of the Bitcoin on the balance sheet is going to outpace, any dollars lost to your share price as a result of issuing more shares, that all of a sudden becomes a very attractive thing to do and a very attractive thing for companies to do, knowing how quickly Bitcoin appreciates. And I wrote a piece about it earlier today. I kind of explored the implications of Bitcoin per share becoming a more widely used financial metric. Because not only is it good for companies and it's good for companies' balance sheets, but it's something that investors are increasingly demanding. Now that Bitcoin is, $1.3, $1.4, $1.5 trillion market cap, and it's been there for 6+ months, now investors are, there are many more investors at play in the market, and they want more Bitcoin derivatives. You have your MicroStrategies, you have even things like Bitcoin futures, you have the miners, but people want, smaller cap equities that they can go and invest into. Obviously, MicroStrategy is approaching, $18 billion market cap, something like that. It is approaching a market cap that is the that will allow it to be permitted into the S&P 500. And so it is increasingly, you know, moving kind of away from this small cap into a much larger company. People want other options that they could get Bitcoin beta from. And so investors are demanding it. And when investors demand it, they want kind of that transparency in the same way they could see how profitable a company is. They want to see how many Bitcoin these companies own. And with MicroStrategy, I think they are the perfect company to have kicked off this whole trend 4 years ago because they're not a Bitcoin company. There's been this, you know, this kind of notion even after MicroStrategy began this whole idea of acquiring Bitcoin for its balance sheet that kind of a foreign concept for companies to buy Bitcoin and hold it on their balance sheet because, well, they're not associated with Bitcoin. Why would I have any? Having a Bitcoin per share as this kind of widely used metric, companies see that investors are demanding it. Companies understand the value proposition of holding it on their balance sheet to, you know, kind of outpace the growth of global M2 as well. I think that it starts getting used more and more. And as a result of it being a widely used financial metric, Bitcoin on the balance sheet is demanded by investors. Then you start to see companies that are even further away from the tech stack, further away from Bitcoin, start considering Bitcoin and investing in it for other publicly traded companies. It is fascinating. And I do think that it will become more widely used. As far as Saylor's Bitcoin yield being used as kind of a key performance indicator for MicroStrategy, I think that is also a very, very smart move, right? And if you take a look at the 8K, actually, and I'll throw it up on screen when you mention it, and I'll throw it up on screen again. Quarter to date, the Bitcoin yield is 4.4%. Year to date, it's 17%. And so that's a very helpful metric for investors to see, even though we're issuing a whole bunch of shares, even though we are diluting the your proportion of MicroStrategy, you are directly benefiting from this because of our Bitcoin holdings that we're purchasing with it. So all in all, I think as Bitcoin continues to monetize, it will just be more helpful for formalized key performance indicators like Bitcoin yield, like Bitcoin per share, to be used in 10K reports, 8K reports, because that'll make it much easier for businesses to stomach the idea of buying Bitcoin for their balance sheet, because there will be like standardized practices for it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Bitcoin yield is essentially like, are we accumulating Bitcoin at a faster rate than we're issuing shares over a period of time? And that leads into the Bitcoin per share metric, right? And so it's like, how are we doing quarter to quarter? Because, you know, these public companies and the shareholders love to measure things quarter to quarter, and that's what Bitcoin yield does. It's like, how are we achieving our goal of our treasury strategy of acquiring Bitcoin? And so, like, MicroStrategy's target is 4-8% Bitcoin yield over the next 3 years, which is really bullish to me because they're going to use all their excess cash flows as well as their access to capital markets, equity raises, convertible debt raises, to try to reach that goal, that long-term target, right, of 4-8% Bitcoin yield over the next 3 years. And that's exciting. And they're kind of there. I think corporations needed a case study like MicroStrategy to say, hey, this actually works. And wow, has it really benefited MicroStrategy? You know, part of that's good timing, but also just kind of a masterful approach to corporate treasury strategy that they've employed. I mean, it's been fascinating to watch.
Absolutely. And to see this over a multi-year time frame, I think, is the most important for companies that may be looking at a Bitcoin strategy and thinking of dipping their toes in the water, because MicroStrategy has been doing this for 4 years now. And so seeing what it's done to their share price with virtually no change in their underlying business, apart from the incorporation of this formal Bitcoin strategy, and then you know, other aspects of their business that are being created around Bitcoin, education, and things like that. Basically, no material changes to their main underlying business that's cash flowing, and their stock price is, you know, more than 10x'd with doing nothing other than doing these different raises in capital markets to acquire Bitcoin. So I think it's fascinating. And seeing companies the world over, right? Metaplanet doing the same thing, Cathedra up in Canada now doing the exact same thing. It is a very, very encouraging sign, particularly with the Fed slated to cut interest rates for the first time in 4 years. It's going to be much more enticing for companies to go to the market and say, look, we're going to make this debt offering We're going to issue more shares and we're going to buy Bitcoin with it. It is more palatable because obviously the price of money from an interest rate perspective is falling, but also with rate cuts comes a much higher Bitcoin price. And so I think for companies that have been looking to allocate Bitcoin, I think over the next two quarters, three quarters, really now is the time to begin assembling a team behind this and getting a strategy together and actually putting Bitcoin on your balance sheet because of those two factors, rates coming down and then what generally happens when rates come down to Bitcoin, which is, you know, we rocket higher.
Yeah. And I mean, it's crazy because all these corporations, they all need it. You know, whether they, you know, they have to be good cash flow, typically like low debt. But they could be like a low growth corporation or like a high growth corporation, but they still have the same problem, which is that these the cash and cash like equivalents are being debased at roughly, you know, 7 to 8% per year. And they all have the same problem. And Bitcoin offers these low growth companies basically like an injection, right, into their balance sheet, but also their culture. It's kind of a transformational strategy that can change the branding of the company into one that's innovative and exciting. I mean, you saw that with MicroStrategy. And I think that's kind of this underlying important point is that Bitcoin changes not just an individual, but a corporation. And that's exciting to me. And so you look at how like Semler Scientific, for instance, or MicroStrategy itself, they kind of came on everyone's radar, right? And you look at what happens to their stock trading, just the liquidity of their stock and how much interest it gets when you start to get a Bitcoin strategy. There is this premium attached right now to any corporation that adopts a Bitcoin treasury strategy because it's new and exciting. I don't know how long that premium will last, but right now, if you are a low growth company who's just trucking along, good cash flow, doesn't really matter what sector you're in, if you want to, you know, stimulate your organization, then buy some Bitcoin, you know, do a Bitcoin treasury strategy. And larger corporations are going to have more hurdles to kind of get buy-in at the corporate level. There's just more moving parts. You're going to have to get a lot of people to say yes to the strategy. Smaller companies are probably more nimble, right? And so I think you're going to see these like small to mid-cap corporations are going to be first. But maybe not. Maybe there could always be this white swan event where some large corporation with a lot of cash, might make the plunge because, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, when you just crunch the numbers and look at MicroStrategy, look at their stock performance, I mean, this there's a lot of soundness to the Bitcoin Treasury Reserve strategy.
There is. There definitely is. I mean, MicroStrategy is not a small company, and it's certainly not a small company anymore. So it would not be off the table for a really large corporation to take the next leap in. But we know that obviously with rates coming down, it's going to be a more favorable environment for, kind of these obviously low growth companies who need, who can inject life into their business by buying Bitcoin. But even smaller companies who are more reliant on borrowing, who may be going through their final round of VC and getting ready for an IPO. I wouldn't be surprised if there were a few stories over the next, several quarters of these much smaller companies who are pre-IPO or about to IPO or just IPO'd who are buying Bitcoin because, like you said, it doesn't just inject life into your stock price because of the volatility you're introducing to your balance sheet. And the extreme beta you're introducing to your balance sheet with Bitcoin, but it injects life into your business and your company culture as well. You attract a whole new clientele when you become that Bitcoin company as well. I mean, Metaplanet, for example, right? A hotel chain, right, in Japan, and now they've completely pivoted to a Bitcoin company, right? Working Bitcoin strategy, developing arms of their company that help other businesses do the same. And even with a business like Cathedra, who was working in Bitcoin mining, but is now broadening out to data centers and on their website too, they've now just simplified their landing page to say a Bitcoin company. So I think this is going to be, it's already pretty popular branding, but I think it's going to be even more popular branding and fashionable branding. And I think that that is a component of adding Bitcoin to your balance sheet that you mentioned that I hadn't even thought about, the branding component of it, of being considered a Bitcoin company, having it to your balance sheet. It's going to introduce volatility to your stock price. It's going to put some life into your stock price, but it's also going to gin up some interest into your company that may be relatively boring.
Yeah. Cathedra is interesting too, because I mean, you mentioned that MicroStrategy's core business is unrelated to Bitcoin. Same with Semler Scientific, and there's some strengths to that, right? Cathedra, I thought their 2024 shareholder letter, they kind of talk about how difficult Bitcoin mining is to be successful, and some of these long-term factors like the diminishing block reward, as well as ASIC efficiencies, and how everyone has access to energy, and why it's so difficult to compete. And so they were already thinking about pivoting with their acquisition of like a hosting company to start to diversify their revenue streams to basically be like a data provider. And now they're saying, okay, well, you know, it's all about Bitcoin. We just want to increase our Bitcoin per share. As a pure Bitcoin mining company, it was actually very difficult for us to increase our Bitcoin per share because of how difficult that business is. And so now they're just completely focused on that. They've diversified their revenue streams, and they're going to focus on just acquiring Bitcoin. And when I think about Bitcoin mining companies, it's hard to imagine more bullish individuals. Like, by definition, they are so bullish on Bitcoin that they are, you know, they built out infrastructure, you know, all the fixed costs to build it all out. They're mining Bitcoin. That, you know, they're on boots on the ground. It just makes sense for them to probably own some Bitcoin too and try to acquire as much as they can. But it gets a little bit risky when the operations of your business kind of depends on that as well. And part of that shareholder letter in 2024 from Cathedra, they talk about how mining operations that have a competitive advantage are going to win out, whether that's access to a really, really cheap electricity. Maybe it's a unique process that gives them basically free energy. Maybe it's like really competitive energy contracts, or maybe it's access to capital markets, right? These large public companies. And I think, you know, that's part of what you're seeing with Marathon as well. Marathon introduced a HODL strategy. Marathon just crossed 26.2 million Bitcoin holdings. They literally did a marathon with their Bitcoin holdings. And, you know, one of the advantages that Marathon has over all these other publicly traded miners is the liquidity of their stock. I mean, you look at their trading volumes, it's very, very high compared to especially some of these smaller publicly traded Bitcoin mining companies. And that's an advantage for them. You know, they can access capital markets. They just issued a convertible debt raise. It was like 2.1%, 2.2%. I can't remember specifically for the interest on that convertible debt. And so if the Bitcoin they acquired from that convertible debt outpaces 2% per annum, you know, that's accretive for their shareholders. And so it makes a lot of sense. And now Marathon's just in this, you know, macro strategy now of just acquiring Bitcoin. And you see Fred Thiel like commenting on Saylor is like, keep some for me. You know, it's just getting kind of wild. But now they own over 26,000 Bitcoin, and the next highest publicly traded Bitcoin miner holds like less than 10. Mm-hmm. And so if you're thinking about a way for a miner to separate itself from the pack, that's probably it. And they have to get the timing right. And if Bitcoin goes up drastically from here over the next 2 years, you know, Marathon will separate itself just by their sheer size of their Bitcoin holdings from their competitors. And that's going to be really interesting to see play out. It's a bold strategy, but like I said, there's not many people more bullish on Bitcoin than Bitcoin miners. And so Marathon's kind of, you know, putting their conviction, you know, to the test. And they're basically saying, hey, we are convicted Bitcoin builders and holders. And so we're going to buy as much as we can. We're going to use our competitive advantage with our access to capital markets to get as much Bitcoin as we can, because that's an advantage we have over other miners. And let's see if this plays out. And so it's a strategy. And I think it's going to play out for them well, personally.
I think so, too. Yeah, no, I'm looking at this tweet right now. Marathon on September 11, 26,200 Bitcoin being held. And that really is incredible. If you look at the total amount of Bitcoin that's held by miners, the fully diluted supply of Bitcoin, so percentage of the terminal supply that's currently held by miners, is 9.61%. That's factoring in the pie, 100% of the Bitcoin that's yet to be mined, which is about 5.9% of the supply. But miners hold just over 2 2 million Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for Marathon to be acquiring this, adding it to its balance sheet, it does really illustrate that these larger miners who have access to capital markets, and by extension, these huge businesses that have access to capital markets, do have an advantage over smaller businesses, over smaller miners in acquiring Bitcoin and actually running a, you know, running a profitable operation. Bitcoin mining is cutthroat, but when you have you are a large and actively traded public equity, then you're in a far better off position than a kind of a smaller regional miner, unless, just like you said, you have some kind of advantage, whether it's an insane energy contract or you have some kind of mechanism for getting your energy at an extremely low cost or free, or you know, you're obviously in the Congo they're running Bitcoin miners using a waterfall. But Bitcoin mining is an extremely cutthroat business. I want to ask you kind of what sort of businesses do you think it's best for to have Bitcoin as a reserve asset? Obviously, rates are coming down. We're in that environment. You mentioned low growth companies, right? They particularly need Bitcoin. Having been researching this for quite some time, what sorts of businesses do you think stand to benefit the most from having Bitcoin on their balance sheet?
Well, I kind of mentioned, you know, what companies, it's the zombie companies that Saylor mentions, you know, small to mid cap stocks that have kind of been trucking along. They got solid cash flowing businesses, strong balance sheets. They built up a huge cash reserve, good business, high margins, durable cash flow, strong revenues, profitable, low debt. Those are the kind of companies that I'd look for. And then you got to look for like corporate governance, I think. Yeah, that can be a big hurdle. Eric Semler talks about that a lot, how one of the reasons why Semler Scientific was able to go ahead with this was because a large percentage of shares were owned by the board. And so typically, it's not unusual for the board to actually not own a lot of the shares of the company that they sit on the board. They kind of collect a paycheck every quarter. And because of that, they're not incentivized to maximize shareholder value as much as a board that actually owns a lot of equity in the company. And so that's one thing you can look for with, like, is a company more likely to adopt a Bitcoin treasury strategy? Also, obviously, if the owner is more innovative, has a history of, you know, taking on, let's say, unconventional strategies in the past, you know, he owns a lot of the voting rights or she owns a lot of the voting rights. You know, those are kind of the things where they're more likely, I'd say, to adopt a Bitcoin treasury reserve strategy, because it is a big paradigm shift in thinking when you think about corporate treasurers. You have to think that cash is no longer an asset, it's a liability. Mm-hmm. And that's a shift in thinking for a lot of people, I think, less so than it was 5 years ago. Like, people are starting to wake up now that inflation has clearly eaten away at things over the last 4 or 5 years. And but it's still like a big shift for these people. And so when you have a board and innovative leaders, and then the corporate governance is right, where they say, okay, let's actually go ahead with this. I'd say it's more likely that a company is going to actually go through, because there's a lot of different steps that need to take place, a lot of convincing that needs to take place, different parts of the corporation from a legal, you know, auditing, financial, tax, you know, they all got to get together and figure out their Bitcoin treasury reserve strategy and come up with a playbook. Now, MicroStrategy literally open sourced their playbook, so they've made it easier for them to do that. But each company is going to be a little different. Just looking at their bylaws and what they can, what they maybe need to change. And then they have to come up with the right partners and vendors and third parties to partner with that have the right internal controls. And you got to know what to look for, how to secure it. I mean, there's so many different things you got to think about. But those companies are the ones that I think are more likely. So looking at just their balance sheets, whether it's a good business, their growth rates, and then look at their corporate governance and those factors together. Those are the kind of companies that I'd look for. Public companies. But what about you? What do you think?
No, I tend to agree. Need to be growing at, you know, a steady, consistent pace. Need to have a decent amount of cash on hand. And preferably have a board of governors that is more focused on, you know, well, they're privy to kind of this high innovation type mentality, right? Obviously, Bitcoin is still a very nascent asset. It's still only, you know, 15 years with, you know, 14, 15 years actually having a price, a US dollar price that it can be traded for. And so $1.4 trillion market cap, it's a huge gamble to develop a strategy, a formal strategy, even if you just take sailors and apply it to your own business. And so you need a board of governors who sees that their business is growing, but it's not growing fast enough. And they're willing to kind of take that risk and take that leap. And they have the expertise and kind of risk-taking appetite, if you will, to jump on board. But I completely agree. With going off of the idea of risk, risk management obviously is a component of managing any corporate treasury. But if you're adding Bitcoin in there, especially so, I have a feeling, actually, I know that businesses who adopt Bitcoin into their corporate treasury as a reserve asset or their primary reserve asset know what they're getting into with Bitcoin's volatility. But are there some specific strategies that businesses can use in order to help mitigate some of that volatility that Bitcoin sees as they're integrating it into their balance sheet? Are there different strategies that these businesses can use to kind of manage the risk of having Bitcoin on their balance sheet, manage a little bit of that volatility?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's more like I just think about hedging strategies. You know, you could sell calls. You can, you know, use futures. There's even like Bitcoin settled futures products that you can use as hedging strategies if you have a large Bitcoin position. I think volatility, I mean, it's really about position sizing. River had a great report. I mean, they said that if you only need 3% of your treasury and the rest can be in cash equivalents, and you'd still outpace the rate of the inflation rate, the money supply. And so a little bit goes a long way with Bitcoin, and position sizing is probably the best way to manage the volatility risk. And you can do other things. You keep doing the dividends and stock buybacks. You can look for an acquisition with the rest of your treasury, and you just have your Bitcoin, right? It doesn't have to be like a triple maxi, like MicroStrategy. If you have conviction, then absolutely, if that's the right thing for your company. But really, I think it's just about position sizing, and then there's some, you know, ways to hedge with different financial products. What about you?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think for me, it's mostly position sizing, because if a company is going to adopt a Bitcoin treasury strategy, chances are they're going to be conservative with it out the gate. And they don't have to be any more, like you said, 3%, I think. And so, in order to outpace the rate of the money supply growing, really all you need is a tiny chunk of Bitcoin. You can experience huge outsized returns in your portfolio if you just incorporate, you know, as little as 2-5% of it into Bitcoin, which for companies is a great deal. But, you know, if you think about it in terms of what it could add on the upside, really it isn't a great deal. And that's kind of the power of Bitcoin, just as you said. It's this spice that you could add to your portfolio as an individual or as a business, and you don't have to do anything fancy. You don't have to lever against it. You don't have to go into public markets and raise cash for it, whether through new shares or new debt. You can really just take some of your idle cash that's sitting there. It might be in bills. It might be in longer-term U.S. treasuries. It might just be sitting in cash. You need to deploy that somewhere and deploy a small amount of it into Bitcoin. I think the best risk management strategy for companies that are adopting a Bitcoin strategy is just getting a little bit of it, allocating 2-4% and seeing what it can do for your portfolio, and then scaling up and out from there. Then naturally, as Bitcoin monetizes, you won't have to manage risk as much when it is a $5 trillion, $10 trillion asset down the line. That volatility is going to go away. And so I think that companies' portfolios that are allocated to Bitcoin can grow as Bitcoin monetizes and grows less volatile. I think people can make it companies can make it a larger part of their portfolio as it grows less volatile, and they they can kind of stomach it more. I think that's probably the path of least resistance for most firms.
Yeah. Agreed. And I think like now is the time. I mean, you have like more regulatory clarity with the approval of the spot Bitcoin ETFs and other things, right? The FASB accounting rule changes. And then, River brought up the liquidity, which I think is important. I think people forget about, you know, Bitcoin's kind of large enough for this to kind of make sense for these types of institutions. Maybe 5 years ago, it was too small But from a liquidity standpoint, just daily trading volume, Bitcoin's probably able, it's grown up enough to actually handle some of this adoption. And so I think we're at this like inflection point, and it's exciting. You know, when you just think about, I think about kind of the long-term consequences of just corporate America being more resilient, right? These companies actually having more resilient balance sheets and being able to weather the storms. That's very exciting when they don't have to decapitalize themselves and they actually have hard appreciating assets on their balance sheets instead of cash that's just withering away. And then they have to decapitalize themselves with stock buybacks and dividends. That makes them, very fragile, right? And then that leads to things like bailouts and, you know, just systemic risk when you have all these corporations that have very weak balance sheets. And it's all a symptom of the broken money. But if they have Bitcoin on their balance sheets and they benefit from the price appreciation and they have robust balance sheets that they're able to do things with down the road, like acquisitions and R&D, and they can innovate more and they just have more flexibility, that's exciting for the health of corporate America. And that's kind of the long-term benefits, I'd say, and of a Bitcoin treasury reserve strategy. And it's why I get like excited about it.
Absolutely. You know, if you're a cash strapped business, you know, and over the long run, you want to be able to grow and expand and stretch your feet a little bit more and work on new and innovative projects and make things exciting again. Bitcoin, allocating to a little bit of it today, could mean you have the ability to do that 1 year, 5 years from now. Not could, it does mean you will have the ability to do that, years from now. It'll offer you that wiggle room by just sitting there on your balance sheet and appreciating more than basically any other asset could offer you. Really, really remarkable stuff happening in the landscape right now. From a custody perspective, obviously we have the ETFs. You can gain directional exposure, kind of a one-to-one price proxy to Bitcoin's movements through an ETF. But, you know, as you mentioned, if you own too much of that, you can be you have the chance to get reclassified as a financial services company. What are the different custody options for corporations, and what do you see people more often than not doing? Are you seeing kind of a working with services like Unchained, other collaborative custody providers to establish a corporate Bitcoin treasury? Are you seeing in-house solutions kind of like they have over at River, with their own proprietary multi-sig setup to hold on to customer funds? And not even, you know, so much what you're seeing, but how do you think custody will look? What do you think most businesses will lean to? Kind of a proprietary solution, working with some kind of custodian, keeping their Bitcoin on an exchange, God forbid. What do you think custody will look like for a Bitcoin corporate strategy over the next 5 years, 10 years? What do you think the most popular method would be?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see how it develops, because there's a lot of different innovations on the Bitcoin side of things, whether you can use like Miniscript and have it actually programmed where you can have multi-party collaborative custody. But right now, I mean, I'd say for the most part, these corporations are probably using third parties, you know, institutional grade custody solutions with qualified third parties is probably the most common, I would say. I mean, you got like the Fidelities of the world, the Coinbases of the world, Anchorage. And it's because they don't want to take on this risk. I mean, as a corporation, Bitcoin's a digital bearer asset. And if they mess it up, I mean, it's completely catastrophic, right? You can't get it back. And so as a fiduciary to the shareholders, I mean, unless they feel like they're a security company and have the technical expertise to actually manage their own keys, I mean, they're taking on a ton of risk to do that themselves. Now, obviously, they can take self-custody and they can do a multi-sig situation. And, they can even do like MPC or something like that. But, you know, there is like a human element to that. Like if you have a couple people that have access to the keys and then they collude and then they run off with the keys, I mean, there's nothing the corporation can do. And so there are different factors. And then there can be collaborative custody where you have like a multi-sig situation, but entities work together and hold the different keys. And that kind of distributes the risk a little bit across different entities and institutions. You know, it could be a lawyer, it could be a trust company, it could be a custodian, or like a law firm, excuse me. But, you know, that's another option. There's a little bit more complexity to that. But at the same time, it does distribute the risk. And so that's attractive, I think, an attractive option as well. And then, like you said, there's like ETFs, but the 40% securities rule kind of makes that not an option. It's one of the reasons why I'm bullish on Bitcoin corporate adoption, because they really are incentivized to buy real Bitcoin, which is cool. But those are the different custody solutions. And you can take self-custody, you can do collaborative custody, or you can do like, you know, trust a third party that's typically like quote-unquote institutional grade custody solutions. And right now I'd say it's the latter for the most part, which is, I think, understandable given just a corporation's needs. And maybe that'll change over time with innovation and different products that are built that kind of utilize Bitcoin's uniqueness as a digital asset. Because when you use Bitcoin, like, it's basically is like digital gold then, where you're just kind of holding it. You're trusting somebody else to hold it in like a digital vault. You're kind of missing some of the, you know, traits that make Bitcoin special, or can make it unique compared to every other asset on the planet, given its digital bearer characteristics. And so perhaps in the future, we can do something cool that gets developed, new products that help distribute the risk, but do it in a more sovereign manner that's embedded in the code itself. So I'm kind of excited to see how that develops.
Me as well. And we know that, you know, Bitcoiners can move fast in developing new solutions. And so I know that over the next several years, there are going to be a whole host of, you know, technological developments that let companies use Bitcoin the way it was intended to, actually holding it on their own as a digital bearer asset. And I think that, frankly, it's what a lot of the ETFs are doing. I think the added effect of the ETFs, you know, being available for purchase and them being relatively popular, they now own almost 5% of Bitcoin supply in total. I think the one of the impacts of this, and maybe we've talked about this before, is that the proliferation of the ETFs is going to drive people to learn about Bitcoin. And then when they learn about Bitcoin, they'll want to start using it the way it was intended to. And so they'll get out of the ETFs and into spot Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I don't think that'll be the majority of ETF holders, but I do think that ETFs are huge for Bitcoin education. I think as Bitcoin corporate treasury strategy gets more popular, certainly there are going to be some entities who allocate to like FBTC or IBIT, and then they see the gains from that. They want to learn more about the asset they're holding. Then they want to adopt Bitcoin outright. They want to hold it on their own. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with that. It's always like a nice starting point. Gemini just put out like a survey results of like 6,000 people. And they found that like 1 in 10 touch ETFs for the first time, you know, their first introduction to Bitcoin, which shows that it's like, you know, is this kind of top of funnel? Maybe not as big as you'd think, but it's only been, this hasn't been around since, or for a year now. So it's pretty early days for these ETFs. But I think that makes sense. I think the same thing's going to happen and people are going to understand the benefits. You know, one of the things MicroStrategy right now is that with MicroStrategy, they own, I think, like over 80% of the Bitcoin now is unrestricted, unencumbered. And that just has better capital efficiency, meaning like they can do more things with that Bitcoin if they ever want to. You know, that's theirs, and it's Bitcoin. It's not some security. And, you know, for instance, maybe, you know, they say they're a Bitcoin development company and they want to build out infrastructure that supports the ecosystem. Maybe they have an idea internally and it requires Bitcoin as collateral to work. And so they can put that Bitcoin to work, you know, in some way. You know, they couldn't do that with a ETF, obviously. And so the fact that MicroStrategy owns so much of the Bitcoin and it's unrestricted, and meaning like it's theirs, they own it. It's not tied to any like secured debt or anything like that. That means they can do more with it down the road. And so I think more and more people will kind of understand that and want to own the real thing as a corporation for that reason.
Phenomenal. And the last one I'll ask you kind of before we tie it in here, it's been a wonderful conversation. Companies currently own about 1.47% of the outstanding Bitcoin supply. 309,147 Bitcoin. Well, the terminal supply, 309,147 Bitcoin, roughly, according to the Time Chain Index. They just published a brand new breakdown of the entities, you know, Bitcoin entities who own Bitcoin, kind of the different cohorts, and companies represent 1.47% of the terminal supply. How big do you think this could get? Obviously, equity markets in America are huge. You know, there's always this huge demand for new and innovative ideas. We've seen what it can do for MicroStrategy. There are definitely more people who are going to come on board, more companies who are going to want to kind of adopt this strategy of putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet. Bigger companies in MicroStrategy, like you said, I think a white swan event where we see an already established huge company having them put Bitcoin on their balance sheet, that's pretty likely over the next few years. How high as a percentage of Bitcoin's terminal supply of 21 million do you think that this percentage can get? Currently, we're a little bit over 1%. You know, over the next decade, several decades, what's your bull case for what happens with Bitcoin corporate treasury adoption?
Well, it kind of just depends on how quickly it moves and also the broader macro environment. I mean, I believe that Bitcoin adoption is a function of the environment it's in. And if we continue to run massive deficits and inflation remains sticky and they keep spending like drunken sailors, and then people are going to increasingly turn to alternatives, and they're going to come across Bitcoin and be like, wow, this is really interesting. Except unlike MicroStrategy, who didn't have anyone to look to, they'll be like, oh my gosh, MicroStrategy's been doing this for years and they are absolutely crushing it. Like, wow. And then they'll go down that rabbit hole and learn about it. And so it could get pretty, it could happen pretty quick. And like I said, these corporations, I think public companies, U.S. public companies own $3 trillion worth of cash right now, or hold $3 trillion worth. River estimates that all U.S. businesses own $7 trillion worth of cash. And so I think Shirish, the corporate treasurer of MicroStrategy, estimated that if 5% of public companies invested their cash into Bitcoin, that would be $150 billion, which would be 10 times MicroStrategy's treasury. That's 5% of only public companies in the U.S. And so, yeah, it could get pretty big if this catches on and gains traction. And it's hard to look at companies that adopt Bitcoin as a treasury reserve strategy, as a treasury reserve asset, and outperform. And other CFOs and treasurers are going to look at that and be like, what is going on? Why are they killing us? You know, this is a competitive marketplace, and every single sector is competing within each sector with each other, and they're all trying to beat each other. And if one of them adopts a Bitcoin strategy, I think they will outperform, and that catches the eye of everybody. So I think it's kind of just incentives and market forces that are kind of pushing corporations towards this. And if that continues, then the numbers are kind of staggering in terms of the amount of cash these corporations hold. And then the access to capital markets is just a whole other dynamic. I mean, these corporations have access to capital, you know, bar none. And so they can just do what MicroStrategy is doing. I just think they're very, very early and have kind of realized this game before everybody else. But, you know, think about what Apple could do if they wanted to, like, implement a MicroStrategy playbook. They have $150 billion worth of cash in their treasury. And think about the amount of convertible debt and, you know, issuance they could do and at the market. Like, they could just, it would just be wild to see them implement something like that. But, yeah, I guess I'm bullish. I think it's going to happen maybe a little bit slower than people expect. I think you're just going to see it on the margins. But all it takes is that, like, one really big brand name company to really seize a headline. And then hopefully they give a shout out to MicroStrategy for kind of starting this whole thing, because it really is kind of amazing what they've been doing.
Absolutely. It really isn't an inevitability, but like you said, it's just a question of timing. Plenty of people are, you know, extremely, extremely bullish on the timeline of these things because they witnessed the deteriorating situation of, you know, the U.S. monetary and fiscal policy. They see the huge deficits we're running. They see what happens at the end of every cycle. And so in the same way that Bitcoin is an inevitability, you know, for consumers is a great hedge to the best hedge against monetary debasement because of its absolute scarcity. Knowing that monetary debasement is a certainty, I think it's only a matter of time before more companies catch on. Right? MicroStrategy was the first. It's now birthed many people following suit over the last couple of years, and that has accelerated too. I think it's really only a matter of time before it becomes mainstream for companies to do the same. But again, like you said, it's just a function of timing. It's just a function of timing and market forces and prevailing, the prevailing macroeconomic regime that we're in. Sam Callahan, excellent conversation, man. Really appreciate it, as always. Thank you so much for coming on. Before we sign off here, where can people find you?
Yeah, thanks for having me again, Joe. This was fun. I'm on X, so you can find me at Sam Calla, SamCallah. I also write a weekly market update at thenewsblock.com. So Substack, just check it out, The News Block. It's a good little report. Got Natalie Brunel, who reads it on audio too. So kind of tag team on that. But you can find that on the Substack, The News Block. Subscribe, let me know what you think. And yeah, it was great talking to you today.
Likewise, Sam, appreciate it. And yeah, I would highly recommend everybody go check out The News Block, thenewsblock.substack.com. If you want all the best in Bitcoin and markets, but you don't want to read a million different newsletters all the time, go take a look at The News Block. Really, really good alpha you can find over there. Sam, thanks a bunch.
Thanks, man.